Welcome to Talking Giants, presented by SeatGeek. I'm your host, Bobby Skinner, here by myself, because Justin, he's at a NASCAR race. He decided NASCAR is more important than the podcast. No, it got rained out, so he's on Monday. We were having Entertainer on anyways, so it's just going to be me and Entertainer rapping for about 40 to 45 minutes on the show. And I thought it was pretty cool at the end. We talked about like how Entertainer scaled back his content, got a different, you know, not making it his full-time job. I thought we had some like fun conversations about it. And then obviously talking about like the Giants offseason and stuff. We got really hyped about like Brian Daboll, like compared him to some people, probably got a little too early prepared, too early comparisons for Brian Campbell. But we got really Brian Daboll being solo just throws me off. So it was really good. So I won't delay it any longer. Here is Chris the Entertainer. How are you doing, man? Haven't talked for a while. This type of the off part of the off season for us is like, you know how consuming the draft can be and free agency kicks right into it, where it's like, all right, now I get to check in with all our friends and see how they're doing, how they're feeling about everything, because we've been lost in our own little world for like almost 2 months.
Yeah, I actually think we did the same thing last year, right around the same time, when it was like kind of the dead time of the offseason after the draft, before training camp starts up. You got the OTAs, but there's not much to take out of that unless you get like firsthand experience. So yeah, I'm excited to come on here, talk Giants football with you, and really excited about this upcoming season. I think the Giants knocked it out of the park, and I'm excited to talk about, you know, what they've done so far in this offseason, what you think. But yeah, excited to come on, excited to have you guys on, hopefully as the season gets closer.
Yeah, I mean, they're expected to win games this year, and rightfully so. I still don't think we're a Super Bowl contender. I don't think we are a contender with the Eagles right now. I don't think there's very many teams in the NFL that are. But yeah, like we're expected to win games this year. Where, you know, last year, if you predicted the Giants being 9-8, you were being a homer. This year, if you predict 9-8, people will be like, a little too negative for me, which is a good place to be. I'm excited to be in that zone of like, all right, time to win games. Now we've had some guests on lately, and we've been able to use clickbait because they give it. You got any insider info? Like just
even insider info.
Like Entertainer reveals the Giants' plan at backup left guard.
I guess like my only insider info comes from Patty. Every now and again, she'll, you know, and I'm sure you have that too. I think you talk to Art and stuff, but you once in a while she'll throw me like a bone, and she'll be like, yeah, you know. In so many words, expect this. But yeah, I've taken my social media break for about a month now, and I'll probably get active on Twitter and YouTube again in about like 2 or 3 weeks as the offseason gets closer. But I kind of like to just, you know, get away from social media for about 6 weeks every offseason, or at least I started that trend last year, where, because there's not much to talk about. I don't want to force it. I don't want it to be redundant. I don't want to talk about the same talking points. But yeah, no real insider info. What I'm excited about is the battles in camp. And I think the position group for me that I'm most excited about is wide receiver, because I think it's really deep and I think there'll be a lot of competition there. But obviously, the one-on-one battles, you want to see how JMS does against Dexter. You want to see how Deontay Banks does against Jalin Hyatt and some of the wide receivers. So that's what I'm really excited about. But in terms of rumors, I know like people are talking about like DeAndre Hopkins now. I don't see it happening. I don't think we have the cap space for it. But yeah, I haven't heard any insider information. I did hear things, you know, throughout the process. Like I knew all along Daniel Jones was going to be coming back. It was just a matter of what the contract was going to be or whether or not they were going to have to tag him. But as of late, I'm haven't heard much. I'm just sitting back, relaxing, getting ready for the upcoming year.
Entertainer reveals the Giants' interest to go at or out on DeAndre Hopkins. That'll be the title for this show. you mentioned the thing you're most looking forward to, and that's one of my questions on the list. Week one, let's pretend that everyone's healthy within reason. Like Wandale does come back from the ACL, may not be perfect, but he's healthy and he's active. Sterling Shepard, we know he has the injury history, but like everyone's active for week one for that wide receiver group.
Yeah.
Who are you running out there with the first group of three? Because we know they're going to rotate and stuff, but being a starter matters. Who is running out there with that first snap of the season if everyone is able to be somewhat healthy?
It's a guessing game right now, but I will give you my guess, but it's a guessing game right now. I think last year shows you that more than anything, that Brian Daboll definitely takes training camp highly. You know, he takes that as a factor for sure. Cause last year, David Sills and Colin Johnson were going to be starters for this team. Had Colin Johnson not gotten hurt coming out of camp. And that's when Kenny Golladay was healthy. That's when Kadarius Toney from what we think was healthy. He's going to take the guys that he feels do the best job in camp and fit his offense. So it's a guessing game. It's really deep. But if I had to guess, I think Slayton is going to be a starter to start the year, at least. I could see him getting replaced as the year progresses. Like, I think Jalin Hyatt is a similar type of wide receiver. And as Hyatt progresses, I could see him overtaking that role maybe midseason. But I think to start the year, Slayton will probably be part of the starting rotation. I think Paris Campbell is going to be part of the starting rotation. I think a lot of people are kind of sleeping on him. Like, every time I've brought him up on Twitter, I feel like people downplay what his significance in this offense is going to be this year. I think he's going to have a pretty big role. I think he fits the offense really well. He's versatile. You could play him on both the inside and out. He has ties to our wide receiver coach. So I think they saw something in him that they liked. And it's a one-year deal because of his injury history, but I would guess he's part of the starting rotation. And I would say Wandell. I think those three going in, if Wandell's healthy in the hypothetical scenario that you said, I think those would be the three guys, and Hyatt would probably be the four.
So you have Paris Campbell playing on the outside, which I think is interesting.
I think they're going to move him around. But yeah, I think he could play both inside and out.
Well, yeah, but I mean, if we're going week one and Wandale's part of that group, that means they're going to use him primarily. Like, obviously, like you said, inside, outside flexibility, that's what a lot of guys on this team have. You know, it's what even Hodgins at 6'4" has inside. The only two that don't are Slayton, who's outside only, and Wandale, who's slot only. What they do with Paris Campbell, I think, is one of the more low-key interesting things to see develop through training camp, whether it's talking about playing time or like we're talking about outside in, because there's an argument to be made that, like, he's more effective as an outside wide receiver. People will bring up this past season and be like, well, he played mostly in the slot, had his best year. That was solely due to health. Like, he's not amazing at the down in, down out slot stuff, where you see his best plays are on the outside.
Like, happened against us. Remember the game? He had the big 60-yard catch or whatever it was.
Exactly. So it'll be interesting to see what their vision is for him. And I know, because he's a slot guy, you view him as short, but he's not short. You know, he's 6'1". You know, he's not tall, but he's not, you know, a Wandale 5'9". Like, he's taller than Sterling Shepard, who's played a lot on the outside, and a lot of other guys who've played on the outside in the NFL. So where Paris Campbell plays to me is going to be one of the more intriguing things, and how much he plays, right? Because they drafted Wandale, a slot guy, in the second round. You have on the outside Darius Slayton, who you just paid. Like, you just paid him a good amount of more money than you did Paris Campbell. Isaiah Hodgins, who we know they really like. And then Jalin Hyatt.
I should have thrown Hodgins in there. Hodgins is probably part of that three too. I think it's going to be more like a four, but yeah, Hodges is definitely going to be part of the rotation as well. I think Hyatt, to start, unless he has an unbelievable camp, is probably going to see limited reps to start the year. I think he's going to have to earn his reps as the year goes along.
Well, that's why, like you said, it's the most fascinating position on the team right now, because you can put together 20 different combinations, right?
Yeah.
And you can make an argument. Like, I can make a good argument for every single different combination of a wide receiver. Every single one that includes Slayton, Hodgins, Wandale, Campbell, Hyatt, and even Shepard. Like, I can make the argument that Shepard, if he comes back healthy and he's the same player that he was last year coming off injury, he should be a starter on this team. So it's just such an intriguing group that I think I land up Slayton. He's the most consistent, has that speed on the outside. And then I'm going to say Hodgins and Campbell. You know, I want to ease Wandale back in a little bit. You know, I think.
Yeah, I think in reality, that's probably what it's going to be, because my guess would be Wandale's not going to be 100%.
Yeah, that's true. That's fair. Fair.
Yeah. But I was doing it on the hypothetical scenario where Wandale was like 100% healthy. They were completely confident using him in the capacity that they want to use him. But in reality, I don't think he will be. So I agree. I think that will be the three that you said to start the year.
And that'd be, you know, if we could get a truthful answer from them, and they shouldn't answer this truthfully, but if you could ask them, like, hey, if Wandale was fully healthy, where does he slate into this offense? Like, do they view these other guys as better pieces than him? Or are they still like, hey, this was the third pick ever taken by this regime, you know, in the first second round pick. And we know how valuable second round picks are and can be. It's just the wide receiver room is so fascinating. And Wandale's really the only one that's here. I guess Jalin Hyatt now, but Wandale and Hyatt are the only ones that are here, you know, that are locked up long term. So pretty interesting to see how that works.
It's the deepest group. We're definitely not top heavy. Like, we don't have a one, but it's as crazy as it is, as weak of a position group as it was last year, they've made it, in my opinion, our deepest positional group probably on the entire team. Like that or the defensive line. The defensive line is pretty deep too.
Yeah, I mean, you have guys like Colin Johnson, Jameson Crowder, who could end up being cut. Now, the unfortunate part of this conversation that you always have to bring up is that injury is probably going to answer a lot of these questions for us.
Yeah.
As it usually seems to go with the New York Giants, and especially the wide receiver position. But right now, while they're all healthy, it's interesting. And then this move has gotten – like, Justin had a tweet about it the other day, and it's like, damn, I hate that I feel the same freaking way. That sometimes forget we traded for Darren freaking Waller. Like, Darren Waller is – go like, Darren Waller is the only risk with him is – will he be able to play suit up on Sundays? Yeah. There is no worry about, is he the same player he once was? Go watch the games towards the end of the season where the Raiders were playing for nothing, coming back, playing for a coach he did not like in Josh McDaniels, rightfully so. That guy sucks.
Yeah.
And he's still a star. He is still a star. He is still, I'm going to be your best player when you line up on the field. And that move's like totally gotten forgotten. And it's like we talk about the wide receiver group and not having one. Like Darren Waller is a true.
He's our one.
He truly is. Like,
yeah.
And we talk about like any of those wide receivers get injured for a few games. It's okay. Next man up, right? Like, because you said it's deep. Darren Waller, man, it's even though we have a good backup in Daniel Bellinger, it's like we need him to be healthy because he is the difference maker. He is what can change this offense. I mean, the guy missed over half the games last year, and he led all tight ends in 20-plus yard catches, right?
Darren Waller, to me, Bobby, I didn't mean to cut you off. Darren Waller, to me, Bobby, is what we wanted Evan Engram to be. Like, he's the better version of Evan Engram. Like, he's much better blocker than Engram was as well. But he's a versatile weapon that's kind of a mismatch nightmare. I think he opens up this entire offense. Now, would I like a true number one wide receiver to go along with it? Yes. I think that would make this offense like reach another level. But Darren Waller is certainly a number one option. He's a credible number one. Like, I could see him being what Kelce is for the Kansas City Chiefs for this offense. Like, he could be a guy that you feature for over 1,000 yards and 8 or 9 touchdowns. He's proven that in the past. It's just health, like you said. And it's the same thing with Paris Campbell. It's health. Those guys have to stay healthy. But I think they have a clear plan for every guy that they brought in. And I'm excited. And if you would have told me going into year two, just based off of Brian Daboll's history as a coach and the way that Buffalo built their offense, that we would construct an offense in the way that we did, I would have said no way. Like, featuring a tight end. But to me, it just speaks to Daboll. And he doesn't care. He's not a guy. I've actually frequently compared him. I know you're a basketball guy. I've frequently compared him as like the opposite of what Mike D'Antoni was for the Knicks. Like, Mike D'Antoni came into the Knicks and he tried to fit his system with the Phoenix Suns, with the New York Knicks. Like, he tried to make Carmelo Anthony like a point guard when he first took over the job because he didn't have his Steve Nash. Dable's like, whatever, just give me players and I'm going to work my talent. I'm going to work my system around the talent that I have. And I think that's a great sign of a good coach. But I'm shocked, you know, if you would have told me 2 years ago that our biggest weapon would be our tight end. But here we are, and I'm excited about it because I saw the ability of this offensive coaching staff to work around the talent that they had. And you think about the mismatches they could create now with all of these players. Yeah, we don't have a number one, but listen, this guy Waller, he's a mismatch nightmare. Like, you think about linebackers trying to cover this guy, Barkley coming out of the backfield, if he's back with the team, which I think he will be, it's just a matter of whether or not he's going to play on the tag. He's a mismatch. You think about that, all of a sudden, what that does for guys like Slayton on the outside, now that they don't have as much attention as they did last year, Campbell's versatility, Wandell's versatility. The Giants have a lot of options now in this offense.
Yeah, it's, and if Evan Neal can become good, like, it makes all the more.
He's the key. All these additions.
He really is the key to this Giants offense, you know, besides the fact of health, is can Evan Neal stay good? Yeah, and that point you made about Brian Daboll of, like, being able, that's hard to find in the NFL. It really is to be able to find guys that are able to just, like, I mean, you saw what they tried to do at training camp, right? It was not the same offense they ran throughout the season. Like, they scrapped what they were running in training camp and changed what they did. And that's really hard for a coach to do. That's really hard for a coach to do in his first season with a guy at that time who they didn't think was going to be their quarterback in Daniel Jones.
Definitely not.
Right?
Yeah.
And And I mean, it's why Bill Belichick, I know the last couple of years have been a little wonky, done a lot of weird personnel stuff with coaching and stuff. But that's why Belichick's like, those offenses and defenses always change to what their personnel is, right? When people like it would always drive me a little nuts when people say Brady's a system QB. It's like the system's been, there's been like 18 different freaking systems. Their systems are based on what their players are. Like if it was Randy Moss, we're throwing over the top. We're using Deion Branch. We'll make that work.
That's a great point because you're absolutely right. There was never the Patriot that I think Belichick's biggest strength was that the Patriots were always ahead of the curve on everybody else. Like they were really the first team that really featured the slot wide receiver as heavily as they did with Wes Welker. They were kind of the first team that used that heavy two tight end set in the passing game. They were really the first team that heavily utilized the running back by committee approach. Like Belichick was always ahead of the curve and they never had like one system. He kind of Dable's similar in that sense. I feel like where not that I'm comparing him to the greatest coach of all time, but he's similar in that sense where he's like, I don't have a specific type of system. I'm going to see what I have on my team and, you know, orchestrate the offense to the strengths of the players on the offense.
Yeah. And so that's what gets me more excited about Brian Dable than anything. Yeah. And it's one of the main reasons I wanted an offensive head coach last year. Now, if you can get a guy like Kyle Shanahan, who has his scheme and mastered it, that's awesome too. But with, you know, the way the Giants personnel is right now, like I love having like that to me is Brian Dable. That nothing impressed me more from Brian Dable, not freaking getting loud on the sideline or whatever these things that coaches do that make us fall in love with them. The thing I was most impressed with was the fact that they were able to change their offense throughout the season, you know? And I remember after the Washington tie and me and Jess were calling out, like this stuff worked 2 weeks ago. It's not working anymore. It's been figured out. They're playing the run on first down. They're not falling for any play action anymore. And then they changed the drop back. And then we saw the offense start to flourish again when they use that drop back quick game, which is, again, we didn't see any of that in training camp. We didn't see a lot of that. We didn't see very much drop back passing in the first 10 games of the year, where it was like almost all play action stuff. So some really cool stuff out of them. I'm excited to see how they use all these pieces, you know, Waller and Saquon being your best players. And then a wide receiver group that has talent, you know, not a superstar, not a number one, not a guy who's changing your offense, but does have talent and how there's they can develop a guy like Jalen Hyatt. Yeah.
Yeah. There's definitely playmakers in this offense now. And they all have different skill sets. You know what I'm saying? Like Wandell is a completely different type of wide receiver than a guy like a Jalen Hyatt or a Darius Slayton. Same thing with Hodgins. He's kind of unique to some of the other wide receivers in terms of his specific skill set. So they all have different strengths, and I'm really excited to see what they could do with this offense. Because you think what they were able to do last year, you talked about how they evolved as an offense from the first half to the second half. Look what they were able to do in the red zone. Like we had like a top five red zone offense last year. The problem was we could never get into the red zone. But now that you have the pieces and you think about Mike Kafka's creativity, I think this offense could take a big leap. And they took a big leap last year. I feel like a lot of people slept on that. They went from 32 in the league to like an average offense. I think they were 17th.
Yeah, they ranked 15th in scoring.
15th in scoring, 17th in yards, so dead center, right? I think they could take as big of a leap this year as they did last year. Not to say that they're going to jump, because that would mean they're the number one offense in the league. But I could see them jumping from like 16 to like 9 or 8 or 9, like being like a back-end top 10 offense, which is huge.
If Evan Neal is at least average, to me, a top 10 scoring offense should be the expectation. Now, again, that's not if Darren Waller gets hurt and Saquon and Daniel Jones misses four games. But as long as we're relatively healthy, you just paid Daniel Jones. You just went out and traded Darren Waller. And if Evan Neal can be just even at just average, I think the expectation has to be a top, probably right at 10, 9th or 10th in scoring.
Yeah.
But with those coaches are like, I think it's a lot of pressure on them to do that, and hopefully they do.
How excited are you for Daniel Jones this year?
I think this would be the first time where it's just like, man, he's got advantages, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's what we thought we were getting in Kenny Galladay. And advantages, like, truly in the receiving game. Like, Saquon Barkley obviously helps, but he doesn't, like, change the passing game, right? Where a guy like Darren Waller changes the passing game. Like, where Saquon's good out, like, as a threat, as a receiver, Saquon's not a great receiver, right? Like, that was something I remember. I think you were at some of those training camp practices where they were actually trying him out, lining him out wide, and it's just like, he's just not a good route runner, right? And it's kind of screwing up the progressions a little bit. And we even saw that first interception versus the Titans. Now that was totally on Daniel Jones, but it started with a just like kind of a weirdly bad route by Saquon. Saquon being the threat out of the bat. What was even the question? Oh, it's just I am excited for him. You know what? Yeah. And if this team can stay relatively healthy, like you have to perform. You know, and he did really well last year, earned his contract. I'm excited about him. I mean, it's been 4 years of like feel like the guys been like dragging the team through hell, and now it's like, okay, hey, we got you, Dan Waller. You got some decent wide receiver group. You got a good coaching staff. Like you got advantages. Like one of the arguments that always frustrated me in 2020 and 2021 was like, well, does Daniel Jones need everything to be perfect around him to be successful? I was like, no, but can we get at least one element? Can we get one? Because we have
give him something.
Coaching.
Give him something.
We got a horrible offensive line. Yeah. We've got a horrible, you know, it was like the best we saw Jones under Garrett was that little stretch, like the Saints game when you had Galladay was actually playing pretty well. Tony was coming onto the scene. And it was like, we're dealing, he's got one and a half. Like, yeah, left guard through right tackle is trash, but he's got a good left tackle. That's the most important thing for him.
Right.
He's got a horrible coaching staff, but he's got a decent wide receiver group at the time. And it's like, he's playing really well. So just give him one and a half. And last year he had that one in the coaching staff, bad offensive line outside of Thomas, and then, a bad receiving group. Got better towards the end of the year when she added Hodgins into the mix a little bit, but still, like,
Still well below average.
And
now I think the most important thing for Jones for me this year and why I do think he's finally going to take that leap. And when I say leap, I don't know how big the leap's going to be. I'm not saying he's going to be Pat Mahomes, but I think he's going to be here's my take on Daniel Jones this year. And the biggest reason why I think he takes a leap where my point was going to be is that he's year two in the same offense in an offense that actually knows what they're doing. Something that he has not had since he's been in the NFL. He wasn't afforded that luxury because they fired Pat Shurmur. I think he would have progressed a lot more than he did had Shurmur stayed as the coach. And we've talked about that in the past. And I think there's a much better offensive coaching staff than Shurmur, by the way.
I actually kind of hate the word leap talking about Jones because I think it discounts what he did last year.
Yeah,
he
played well. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
I want to see growth. You know,
growth.
For me,
growth's a better word. Growth's a better word.
Yeah. And it's nitpicky of me because it's like when I see like people like saying he's going to take everyone's like, you know, social media, it's like, this is year five. We're talking about the leap. It's like, no, he played well last year. He played well.
Last year was certainly a leap. Yeah.
Here's
my take on Jones this year, Bobby. I think by year's end, because I think when we talk and when I talk to other like Giants content creators, for the most part, not all of them, there's still some that are definitely anti-Jones. But I think most Giants fans and certainly content creators that I respect, for the most part, view him as at least a fringe top 10 quarterback in the league. Not top 10, but like between 12 and 15-ish. I think that's where we're all kind of settled in, where he is right now. I think by year's end, the leap for him is going to be he's viewed that way by NFL fans. I think outside NFL fans by year's end are going to view him as a fringe top 10 quarterback.
Yeah, I think that should be the expectation, right? When you pay him that money, that should be the expectation to be like a top 10 quarterback. Where I want to see growth is one, creating more explosive plays. Now, they didn't really put those on the menu for him last year. It's not like he wasn't passing them up last year, even though they were, you know, but they just weren't on the menu for him. Those are going to be on the menu to take. And then the one thing that really bothered me about Jones's game last year was, and this is like you got to watch film review, stuff like that. Like they would run these like high low plays and they would have like a hole on the sideline. Like the wide receiver's there in a hole. There's a safety above him, a corner underneath him, but that's a throw that Jones can make. He can make that. He can make it 9 times out of 10. And he just didn't pull a trigger on those. Now that we have some weapons and there's going to be more, you know, aggression, I want him taking those shots because he ran like last year he played. You know, you go through those games stuff film wise, like you go and I go through all of them. Most of those games, you'd go up to him like, man, you can be a little nitpicky about some stuff, but these are damn near flawless games. There's one or two plays here or there, but like you watch other quarterbacks, even quarterbacks who have a great game, you're going to find five plays that are just, hey, you made the wrong read here. Jones rarely did that, but when he did, it wasn't even like he would complete the passes, but it's like, man, you left yards on the field.
I
view like, you know, the double move versus the Seahawks. And then those whole shots were more consistent. He really wasn't like passing up 20 plus yard throws. There was a couple, but he really wasn't passing those up. Those are sideline hole shots. Those are.
Here's my theory on that, Bobby, and why I think there were certainly some plays. Like people would point out, you know, you see all the Twitter GMs, not saying you, but like a lot of people that attempt to do film breakdowns, and they'd always point, oh, he left this play in the field. He left that play in the field. He left this play in the field. And I'd be like, okay. But one, we don't know what they're instilling in him, you know, in terms of the coaching staff week to week, what the game plan is. I think Jones and the coaching staff saw how limited of an offense that this was and how limited of a defense that this was for, you know, to take it even further. Because we did not have a lot of talent on defense last year after all the injuries that we sustained, and realized that this was a team that could not afford to make mistakes. So to me, this year, it's going to be different. I think they're going to encourage him. They're going to say, listen, you could throw a few more picks. We can overcome mistakes. It's worth it to try to hit that big play. But last year, I think it was instilled in him that basically, listen, don't make mistakes. Get the ball inside the 20, and then we're going to rely on Kafka to get the ball in the end zone because we have a great offensive coaching staff. But we don't have those playmakers. We got guys dropping footballs. And if we turn the ball over even once in a game, we're going to lose because our defense isn't very good. So especially after McKinney went down and everything else.
I agree with that. I agree with that 98%, because like if you bring up like, oh, it's low average depth of target, that was the way the offense was built. And that's why I said the 20 plus yard throws, like the fact that we didn't throw it bothers me that those didn't happen because I want them to happen. But again, Jones wasn't passing those up. Those were just not on the menu for him last year to throw. But there was there'd be like two throws a game, not a game, but in some game, like maybe five.
I saw the throws. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
I just want to see the willingness to throw those. That's all I want to see. That's my only concern, is that after 2 years of Garrett in the offense last year, that hopefully we don't have a match. We went from a guy who was a little over aggressive to a guy who might be just inherently too conservative
too much,
a quarterback.
Too much like Alex Smith.
Yeah. Like hopefully we haven't reached that point. Like again, I'm not, like you said, we're not expecting gunslinger Jones out there. But we want to see more aggression than what we did with, now that we have these new players, hopefully some development out of Evan Neal. Dude, we've went 25 minutes, and I think we haven't talked about the thing that probably made us the most happy, because I know you and I know me. How did we get freaking John Michael Smith, the best center in this draft, at 57? Dude, I'm telling you, that pick me, and maybe the offensive line bias in me, but I was just like, that was my prayer. When we got out of round one, John Michael Smith is still available. And I'm like, just get me John Michael Smith somehow, some way. Don't be cute and take the guy who's 2 years younger and more athletic and Joe Tippmann. Get me John Michael Smith. And they didn't have to trade up. They didn't have to do anything.
Bobby, I mean, I said it on Twitter like a week before the draft. I said my dream scenario was, because in the realistic world of dream scenarios, because I viewed like there was like four or five guys we could potentially take in the first round, and Deonte Banks was the guy that I thought fit the defense incredibly well. I know you were you liked the Banks pick. You didn't love it. But Banks, to me, I felt like he fit the defense really well. And I felt like his upside was as high as probably any corner in this draft, or right up there. Porter's up there too.
Oh, yeah.
Because Porter's got the length. He's 6'4", the long arms. Gonzalez has all the measurables. I remember when I did a video on it, Gonzalez kind of, he's like the prototypical, like with the size, the speed, the combine performance. But for me, when I saw Deonte Banks, 4.35, 40, he's got, I'm not going to say super long arms, pretty long arms. He's physical. He fits the defense incredibly well. He's who I wanted with our pick in the world of reality. Like I prefer that over going the wide receiver. And then, like you said, once JMS got to the second round, I said, if this guy ever drops to us, we have to take him. I would have been completely fine taking him in the first round. It wasn't my dream scenario, because I do think it would have been viewed as a slight reach, even though I wouldn't have cried about it. I would have been like, listen, if JMS turns out to even be an average center for the next 10 years, he's worth the pick. But the fact you're able to get him at 57 after getting Deonte Banks and then getting Jalin Hyatt on top of it, that was like a dream. And I think we all said the same thing the year before too, in the first round, when we ended up getting both Thibodeau and Evan Neal, like that was our dream scenario. But this scenario playing out was much less likely than landing two guys inside the top seven picks that you wanted. To be able to get Banks at 24 or 23, I think it was, after we traded, maybe whatever it was, 24, I think we traded up one spot, and then be able to get JMS and then Jalin Hyatt on top, it's a slam dunk. And now you've got three core pieces on your offensive line. And if those guys work out, you've got the makings of a good line for the next 10 years.
Yeah. I mean, it's you have the pieces to get something done, offensive line wise, like going forward. Like you've got the John Michael Smith's, Evan Neal, the expectation is to be really good. You get picked seventh overall, The expectation is to be really good. And to honestly, anything less than that's disappointing. If he turns out to be just like a slightly above average tackle, will you take him? Will you give him a second contract? Yes, but it is a disappointment.
Wasn't worth the pick.
John Michael Smith, I really am confident in him that he's going to be a really good center. And then you've got, Azudu. We'll see what he turns in. Bredesen. His health worries me because he gets injured so much, but he's still very young. He's only 24, he's only 24, 25 years old. And I thought he was their best interior offensive lineman last year when he did play.
Not saying much.
Yeah, no, definitely not saying much. I'm hoping we don't have to give like those not saying much compliments as Giants fans going forward, where it's like last year when I would like talk about like Tay Crowder or Jalen Smith. And I'm like, Tay Crowder to me is the starter for this team. People are like, Tay Crowder's trash. I'm like, yeah, I know, but I'm comparing him to Jalen Smith currently at this moment.
Yeah. And so by the way, there might not be a player I'm more excited about than Bobby Okereke. We didn't even get to him in the defense yet. Like, we finally have a freaking linebacker, Bobby.
That was my question. What's your favorite move of the offseason? Is it okay?
Listen, people ask me on my channel like 2 months leading into the offseason, what do you think the Giants are going to do in free agency? And I didn't say Bobby Okereke, but I said linebacker because I looked at it like, one, I don't think they're going to utilize a top pick on a linebacker. I don't think it's a position that Joe Shane's going to view as that he wants to invest heavily on. I viewed the linebacking core in free agency as one of the stronger positional groups. And it was beyond a need. You could have argued it was our biggest need going into the offseason. You just said it. Tate Crowder was arguably our best linebacker last year. So I knew that they were going to address that. And I knew it was like 99% they were going to address it in free agency. Bobby Okereke, if I'm being honest, was not the guy that I had circled. He was not like one of my top two or three guys that I thought we would get. But after we got him, after I got a chance to like look at him and see how I feel he could fit this defense and his upside, you got to remember this guy's only 25. I think he could be a lot better in coverage than people think. I know that's like kind of like not been what is viewed as his strength, but his athleticism is off the charts. When you watch his side to side quickness, I think he's a linebacker that you could do a lot of things with. And yeah, like Waller's obviously the sexy move and I'm super excited about it. I'm really excited about Banks. JMS might be my favorite move, but I think the move that excites me the most is Bobby Okereke.
Yeah, I'm excited to see how he plays in this defense. Now, this defense asks a lot about its linebackers, but I'm excited. I think he's a cerebral. He seems like a really smart dude, like who understands the game, and played on a good, played on a good team that had good linebackers with Darius Leonard and Zaire Franklin, and went out and had a really good season last year on a team that wasn't very good, a pretty damn bad team. So, yeah, Okereke obviously was when you saw the linebacker free agency market, when you looked at the linebacker draft class, and it just felt like we're getting a linebacker free
agency.
It was like day one, I'm expecting us to get a linebacker, and then they did. Now they made us sweat it out a little bit. Because usually, how it is, like the first 4 hours of free agency, you're like, what is the team doing? It's like even when this team has spent big, it hasn't been in the first 4 hours of free agency. Like the Kenny Golladay and the Dory Jackson. For agency, that stuff didn't even happen 3 days later. Blake Martinez, like it usually happens around hour 8 or 9 when the Giants make their first big move. But the linebackers were starting to go off the board. It's like, okay, we got to get one of these guys. Let's get out of here with one of these guys. So Okereke certainly, linebacker was their weakest position last year. But
I thought it was weak. I don't even think it's close.
The first four games of the season, you can argue when you're throwing David Sills out there as a starting wide receiver and Marcus Johnson. But once you got Hodgins and Slayton made his way back into the lineup, it was easily linebacker. It was the weakest position on the team.
But I'm gonna tell you, and I think that's the most excited I am. I'm going to tell you, I think the most important upgrade for this team, especially when you look throughout the division and the strengths of the teams from within it, I think and they're under the radar moves like Nacho and obviously later in the process we picked up why is the name escape me right now? We picked up
John Robinson.
Yeah, getting those two guys to add to the depth of this defensive line, I think is probably the most important, including the wide receiving core, the most important improvement that this team had for the 2023 season. Because we were that bad against the run. We were that bad against the run.
Yeah. Yeah. So now second linebacker is still a very weak position. I was hoping you'd get out of the draft with somebody in there. And that's where losing some picks, you know, like they lost, you know, a fourth pick round pick and a fifth round pick. That's where it's like you lose out on edge depth and a linebacker depth, but come away with Banks, Smiths, and High. You can't be too angry about it. That's something that's like, if the Bears take John Michael Smith, Jalen Hyatt was picked with pick 57.
And by the way, I didn't get to see your draft reaction. I saw your draft reaction after we took Schmitz. I didn't get to see the lead up. I'm sure that you thought the same thing I did when the Bears traded up and jumped the Giants. Center was like their biggest need. I was like, it's done. We're not getting John Michael Smith. It's done. It's over.
Well, and they traded up in front of us and took the position we took in the first round. What are you doing, Chicago Bears?
Yeah, I didn't get it. I mean, I'm happy.
And they took a guy who actually mocked to the Giants in the second round, Tyreek Stevenson. I really like Tyreek. He reminds me of James Bradbury. But yeah, like I was like, oh, they. So then once they took Tyreek Stevenson, the panic went from the Bears taking him to like, okay, Giants, I know you guys like Jalen Hyatt. I know you want speed. Do not pass up John Michael Smith. Do not, like, that was mine. Like, do not get cute and worry about it. He's 24 years old. Yeah. Do not pass up on
Don't get cute here. And the most interesting thing was, because that was the thought process in my head too at that point. And and if you go back and watch my draft reaction video, it was my exact thought process. And none of the reporters asked it. And I was like, I wish one of them did. Was your pick where were we picked? 57? I don't even remember what the pick was. Was your pick at 57 between Hyatt and John Michael Smith? Nobody asked that. And then when you got a chance to watch the draft recap, that's in fact what it was. You saw them going back and forth where Brian Daboll was talking to Shane and he said, well, we're going to get one or the other. We're going to either get Hyatt or we're going to get John Michael Smith. So they got a guy that they would have been completely comfortable. And it makes sense because then they traded up like 20 spots to go up and get him in the third round. But they got a guy that would have been completely happy with taking a 57 later in the third round.
And I've said this phrase a million times. They got three players who were mocked to them at pick 25. It's insane. Banks, Smiths, and Hyatt. Now, if Hyatt was picking up, if Smiths was picked at pick 25, I wouldn't be outraged, but I'd be a little disappointed, even though I love John Michael Smith. I'm like, I just thought there'd been better players.
I think you would have been like me. I think you would have been disappointed for like a day or two, and then you've been like, hell yeah. We got a center.
If Hyatt was taken at 25, I would have been outraged.
I wouldn't have been happy with Hyatt at 25. I agree with that.
But at pick 73, it's like, okay. It's so funny how where a guy's pick totally changes the conversation. Because like when we talked about Hyatt on our wide receiver preview, we were talking about him in the context of like people are putting him in the first round and I just don't see it. And then it's like, then you pick him at 73. It's like, okay, let's freaking go.
Yeah.
It's like,
he's a better version of Darius Slayton. Like
I agree. Where like as fast as he is, he's not a yak guy as far as like making guys miss or anything. He has great hands, right? Like that's one.
Which is what makes him better than Darius Slayton.
Yeah. And I think he is faster than Slayton.
Yeah.
Not by a wide margin, but I do think he's faster. And I think he can grow into a better route runner than Slayton is. So, like, my expectations for Hyatt, despite being a third-round pick, is to be better than Darius Slayton.
Yeah.
Who I know we like to trash on Darius
Slayton. No, he was good for us last year.
But, I mean, Darius Slayton is the best day three pick we had for five, six years. You know, obviously, we had some pretty damn bad day threes for a while. I was really excited about day three in this draft. Eric Gray, to me, I think could be a starting back.
I love the Eric Gray pick.
Trey Hawkins, man, that guy, even like I don't have real expectations for him, but a guy who's that size and can move like that in the sixth round is something
and
freaking
he's
beautiful.
Physical,
Javarius
man.
Owens.
Yeah.
Javarius Owens, I think he could come in and compete to play this season. I really do, despite being a seventh round pick. And we've seen the Bills with Joe Shane hit on guys in the safeties, like DeMar Hamlin was like a late sixth, maybe even a seventh round pick for the Bills. And he was starting by year two. You know, obviously he's more famous for the health thing, but it's like he was a starting player for them. I think Javarius Owens has similar ability.
Yeah, and I think those guys, if nothing else, are going to be big time contributors in special teams. I know that's like something we don't like to talk about because it's not fun, but the special teams last year for the Giants was awful. And this year, I think it's going to be – that is probably going to be the biggest improvement in terms of a positional group. I think our special teams are going to be much better because now you're – last year with all the injuries that we had and just the depleted roster in terms of talent, you were basically asking special teams players to start. Now you're going to ask special teams players to play special teams. So I think it's going to be a trickle-down effect. I think the whole roster is going to benefit from all the, you know, to the improvements to the starting offense and defense.
And we had one of the most well-respected special teams coordinators in the NFL. He's so well-respected. Sorry, that's like a stupid joke on this show. It's like all the beat reporters tweet about how well-respected Thomas McGahee is. It's like, yeah, we get it. He's nice to you.
Which I don't understand. No,
well, I don't understand it. He's just very nice to them.
Yeah, no disrespect to him. Like, I'm sure he's a pretty good coach. Like, they decided to keep him to begin with. But, yeah, I agree with you. Like, the results have not been there.
Yeah, since I don't evaluate special teams. Like, yeah. Like, he could be the best or the worst in the league. I have no idea the difference. But I do know that, like, hey, our special teams haven't been an advantage. So I'm really starting to get annoyed with talking about how well-respected this guy is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they'll say well respected within the building. It's like that doesn't mean shit to me how well respected he is. Are you going to be able to make it to any of the training camp practices or fan fest or anything this year?
They fall on the weekend, right? I know most of them are during the week, but there's a few that are on the weekend, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I'll definitely make it a point to go to the fan fest. I'm pretty sure is on the weekend, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe
fan fest
not.
Is usually on a weekday. It was Thursday and then Friday last year.
Maybe I'll be. I don't want to guarantee I'll be able to make that, but I'll definitely be able to make the training camps, and I'll try to make the fan fest. I mean, it's at night, so I should be able to. If maybe not tailgate that long before, but I should be able to make an appearance. But I'll definitely at least go to one or two training camps.
Okay, cool. I want to talk to you about that towards the end of the show. Now that it's like we got our 40 minutes of just Giants football field. Now we can talk about our
own. I could talk about Giants football with you for another 40 minutes if you want.
I know.
We go all day.
So how much, what is your new job? What's the address? How much are you making before taxes?
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you want to, like, what kind of made you, because I know, I won't go into details, but I know you made enough on money on YouTube to, like,
yeah, I'm going to be completely raw and honest with you, Bobby. And I still love doing what I'm doing on YouTube. But I wanted the last year with Joe Judge to me, I wasn't having fun anymore. If I'm being honest, I just was not having fun. Not to say I didn't have fun talking about the team. I always love talking about the team. I'm going to continue to love talking about the team. But that year just took so much out of me as a content creator and just a fan is in general of just the animosity of the fan base and people that would come into my live streams. And I said to myself, you know what? I want to look for a job outside of YouTube so I don't need to depend on this as my only source of income. So I got a government job. I'm not going to get into specifics, but it's kind of a lower level entry level government job that I'm going to try to work my way up. And, you know, hopefully get
work
to
your
higher,
way up to where
pay
you're,
scale.
Yeah. You know, killing people. And, you know,
it's not that kind of government job. It's much more
planning conspiracies. No, has it been refreshing? Like when you, cause I get like, now I have the luxury of, depend no matter what the Giants are doing, my salary is the same from John Boy Media. But I'm sure like
it had nothing to do with money. I could have kept going on and making just as going live all the time and it had to do with happiness, to be honest.
I agree.
I'm not gonna get into too much specifics. I talk about you more off camera, but I got to a point where it got toxic, where it was like having to deal with this as my only source of income, as my full-time job, my only job at the time, it was making me enjoy it less. And I said to myself, if I scale back and don't have to force content and don't have to, you know, feel the need to go live whenever and just do it because I genuinely enjoy doing it, which is why I started doing this in the first place, I'm going to enjoy it a lot more and I'm going to produce, you know, better content. I'm going to produce less content because I'm not going to force it. Like I see a lot of other people, not you guys, but I'm just saying I felt like I was getting into that trap of just going live and making content to make content. And that's never what I intended to do. So I said, let me go and get a job so I don't have to feel the pressures of, you know, having to just make content to make content.
Yeah. And it's kind of like, it's just kind of a weird existence making content. Weird is maybe the wrong word, but it's just kind of different where it's like you are like, we're talking about the team we love, like stuff we would do anyways, but it's like it, every job becomes a job, no matter if it's your dream job or not. Right.
Yeah.
And now we find little things that are exciting about doing it. But hey, if we were like you on our own, not backed by a company, we would have to make a video talking about DeAndre Hopkins. Like, even if we're saying full no, we got to at least address it, because like it's stupid to avoid.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest with you, Bobby. I remember having this conversation with you when you, and I'm not going to get into specifics, but I remember having this conversation with you on whether or not it was a better idea to do work under a bigger company like you do with John Boy, or to do it on your own. And at the time, I was of the mindset of I'd rather do it on my own. In now, in reality, I think I'd rather do it the way that you guys have done it. I'd like to start my own company.
It has its pros and cons, right? Like, you got to answer to somebody. If you do something stupid, you got to.
But at the same time, you could produce content when you feel like it. And you could, and you don't, like you said, you don't have to make these stupid rumor videos that you see. You know, it's like, in a way, I think you took the better approach.
Yeah. And again, there's pros and cons. There is it's something that now that we've kind of found a flow of it, and now we're 5 years of talking Giants, I'm like, what am I going to do in 10, 15 years? Am I going to be working for John? Like, I love working for John Boy, but am I
your own company at that point?
There's business within my family. Maybe I'll, take on that when my dad goes or retires or something, and then just do this on the side. Like, am I going to be doing this forever, even though it's like, it's a dream job, so you'd want to do it forever, but like, where does it end? Like, does it end with doing Talking Giants and John Boy Media Football? So it's the Talking Giants to me is very fulfilling. Like, I feel great about it. Now that we're trying to tackle JM football, I'm like, man, this is a lot. And I'm like, got so much on my plate, and we're trying to get them to bring on. And I guess, the company's talked about it. The company laid off some people and they're not hiring anybody right now.
Really?
Not, they didn't lay off any content people, but it's like, now we're like, I'm on my plate. I'm like, hey, you guys tasked us with John Boy Media Football. It cannot be done without someone focusing on just football content. I cannot do Talking Giants and then just solo do John Boy Media Football and have it be good and have growth besides during the draft, because there's crossover. But even then, so I'm like, we need to hire someone, but like, we're not hiring anybody right now. So it's like, I'm stressed about that, even though it's like Talking Giants is super successful. It's one of the, more successful things in the company, and on a path to, I think, being pretty profitable. So I just wanted to kind of get your head on it, because I get it. Like, when people are like, where entertaining go? I was like, oh yeah, it makes total sense. Like, this.
No, listen, I'm not going away. I'm not going away. But Bobby, the way I look at it is, I want to make it more of a second job, and I want to have a life off of YouTube. That's what it got to the point. I'm an older guy. I'm 37, and I got to a point where I was like, I'm thinking longer term. I'm like, hopefully very soon, I'm trying to get more established in my career, but I want to be able to start a family and kids. I want to be able to get a house, and for me to have to dedicate all my time to YouTube and, I thought this was the better approach. It's not that I'm giving up on my dreams. I'm still doing what I love to do. I'm still talking Giants. I'm not giving it up. But at the same time, I'm scaling back a little bit.
Yeah. And like, and we'll finish off with this, where it's like, when I took it at it long term, and I'm glad we could talk about this and people can kind of get a look into our heads. Like, if there is an event, like a family event in season, it stresses me the fuck out. Cause I'm I've got 3 shows we got to do, got to watch the games, got to watch the film, do the film review, do the offensive line report. And it's like, unless this event is on Friday night or Saturday, like, it's going to throw my whole week off, whether even just like a Tuesday dinner. And it's like, is every September to January going to be like that for the rest of my life? Like, can I not make a plan in April ever again because of the NFL draft?
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
So it's cool to get a look into your head and kind of let people see, like, this is like, yeah, this is awesome.
I still love whoever's ever watching this. And I know we have a lot of the same subscribers and we work in the same community. I still love each and every one of you guys. I'm not going away. I appreciate all the support you guys always show when I watch my videos. I think I've just gotten to a point where I know, or at least I hope, and I think I have a dedicated fan base, that people that love to hang out with me and talk about the team that we all love. And I don't feel, I feel like I've reached a point, I guess, in my YouTube or content creation level, if that is the proper terminology to use, where I don't need to force content, where you guys respect me enough to be like, listen, when Chris is ready to talk about the team, I'm still going to support him.
Yeah, finding that happy medium. Happy you were able to do that, even though you're going to be doing huge government conspiracies and stuff 5 years from now.
I can tell you after the stream who killed JFK. We'll get into that.
Yeah, that's going to be released. And maybe you can help us when we try and run for president in 2024 again. So I made a tweet.
You might win. I mean, you've seen some of the guys that are going for it. You guys stand a chance.
Well, I made a tweet saying I'm seriously considering voting for Dale Earnhardt in 2024. And I seriously am. And someone replied, like, what's your politics? Which is like...
Well, you live in the heart of not to get into politics, but where DeSantis, you live where he's from, so you know all about him. I'm not the biggest fan of him, and obviously Biden's not the most popular president. So
if you want to know who I vote for, though, just go to my Instagram. I posted who I voted for. It's a great plug for my Instagram, and it can either make you it can't make one of the sides angry, but it can make both sides angry or understanding.
Did you vote for myself? Dale Earnhardt?
No, I voted for myself. Like everyone says, they hate both the options. Then it's like, well, don't pick them.
Yeah.
Also, I'm like, you know what? I don't care. Like this country's screwed anyways. You'd like both these people. I can't believe we put this in. Maybe cut this out, Justin. basically, what I'm saying is like our politics are broken, and yes, Chris is going to fix them.
They've been broken since we've been alive, Bobby.
And Chris is going to fix them, even if he has to cover up a few national conspiracies. All right. Chris, we appreciate you. All right, we don't have any ads, so I can just end this. We appreciate you guys. We'll be back on Friday. It'll be me and Justin. I'll be back home. Justin will be back home too. Both on the road right now.
I was gonna say, where are you? Because that's not your normal setup.
Spain. I'm visiting Spain.
You're in Spain?
I may just stay here. I love it here.
You're in Spain?
Yeah. I'm gonna be like, you know, Michael Scott when he comes back from the Bahamas. Or no, he came back from Jamaica, and I'm just gonna be like, well, in Spain. This is how we do it. And we take naps at 3 o'clock.
That's awesome, man. I've been to Spain once. I loved it. But I only went there for a cruise. So I spent like 2 or 3 days there. But that's awesome.
Yeah, it's really nice. I went to Portugal too. And there we just Portuguese. You just say everything with shh. That's how they do it here. No. All right. We appreciate you guys. We'll be back on Friday. Basically we talk politics, and then I annoyed every single listener from Portugal. We'll see you guys Friday. Until then, let's go big blue.
The first ever Warehouse Games Captains League Slapball Tournament is underway. Head over to the Warehouse Games channel to see all the action from Slapball presented by Shady Rays. Upgrade your eyewear game today with an exclusive offer from Shady Rays. Go to ShadyRays.com, use code WAREHOUSE for 40% off polarized sunglasses. Try for yourself the shades rated 5 stars by over 300,000 people. Thanks, Shady Rays.